I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Lee Robinson. Lee is the owner of Robinson Sotheby's International Realty. And your grandmother was the very first woman real estate agent in Cincinnati. And she built the very first condominium. And how proud she would be today to know that you, her grandson, is the leading sales agent in terms of condominiums in this entire region.
Yeah, I think she would be proud. Long since passed, but she did build the first condominium in Cincinnati in 1956, overlooking the river of all things. She, you know, a little ahead of her times, and that 1956 building is not modern by today's standards, but was pretty hip in its day.
It seems like, just from an outsider's viewpoint, that real estate sales are really brisk, and it's kind of a seller's market now, isn't it?
It's dynamically different than it was. We have a different problem today. When we talked 3 years ago, we would have had an oversupply and a very shallow demand. Not many buyers looking for in a plentiful group of homes. And now quite the opposite is true across the nation, and certainly here in Cincinnati, where there's limited supply. In other words, there's not enough homes on the market to meet the demand.
And we're entering that time of the year, aren't we? We're the season for realtors, where people really get their houses spruced up, put their homes on the market.
Correct. And in fact, that's the majority of what I do in these months, is owners ask me to come over and, you know, give them pointers about how to prepare in advance to be ready for showing their homes. And they, you know, frequently have a few things to do, sometimes a lot of things to do, getting that out. And then a lot of times we'll do quiet marketing. Sort of depends on the property itself, you know, what we're envisioning, the exact best time to promote it more fully, you know, via the internet, via the multiple listing service, via signage, etc. Right now, there are a lot of people that are in this sort of pent-up demand mode on both sides of that table, meaning that we have buyers that have a very, very strong demand, but many of those buyers are also sellers, very, very delayed in their ability to sell their house over these troubled, you know, last 5 years in our economic meltdown. And, you know, they needed a bigger house, or they needed a house in a different school system, or they needed a house in a different town. And there's a big demand.
When you go work with a homeowner, how do you determine the value of their home? Because I would think that's the first question people ask you.
True. That's generally the top concern for a seller, of course. We look at a variety of what I'll call data points or barometers. The easy ones would be if they had a similar house down the street from them, built in the same era, similar architecture, floor plan, square footage, etc., and condition, and current condition, of course. That would make for a nice, easy, what we call comparable. I think many people in your listening arena know that. Unless you're in suburbia and you're in an active market, and we haven't had an active market for a long time, so there really hasn't been a plethora of these data points in which to have assurance of those comparables. So we have to look deeper, and, you know, like an appraiser would do today, they are going to look at whatever comparables are available to them and have to do some pluses and minuses based on different location, different sizes, different architecture, etc.
What is your contact information if folks listening today would like to learn more about your services or about what they need to know to buy or sell a home?
Oh, sure. Anybody could reach me at my office number, which is 513-321-6000, or via email, lee@robinsonsir.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Lee Robinson. Lee is the founder of Robinson Sotheby Realtors. I know you sell and have sold for a long time a lot of single-family homes, multifamily homes, but you're also the number one seller of condominiums in this area. I would think it's a little more complicated when someone's buying a condominium. I assume there's more hurdles you have to go through. Is that right?
Very definitely. You know, that simplified lifestyle is very appealing to people. They prefer not to cut their grass or put on a new roof. But within the condominium lifestyle is a governance. People know them as a homeowners association or as a condominium declaration bylaws, those sorts of things. And so, yes, they have to abide by that association's rules. And many times that's within a building. We even see it particularly in suburban development. Sometimes there'll be homeowners associations that are overlays even for single family homes. It is a broader issue than meets the eye. The buyer has to, in essence, agree, by virtue of their ownership, they're agreeing to all of those covenants and conditions and restrictions.
So they need to look at more than just the specific unit and how pretty it is. They have to look at the bylaws and make sure they understand whatever restrictions or costs there might be in terms of being part of the condominium association.
I'll give you some examples. For instance, we're representing the Ascent now, the kind of iconic, regional, and as well as the South Shore, which is another beautiful high-rise building. Those are the two kind of modern, very attractive buildings on our riverfront. They will each have slightly different rules and regulations. As an example, the Ascent, if you were to move in with your three dogs, you would soon find out that you're not allowed to have three dogs. But if you had two dogs and two cats, you're okay. So these are these little nuances. Yes, you can have four pets, but they can't be three dogs. Those are things that you would want to know before you'd make that buying decision.
Tom mentioned that you are the leading condominium sales agent in the entire community, but you're grandmother, who was the first woman realtor in our region, she also built the first condominium. She was way ahead of her time, wasn't she?
In that day, in 1956, they didn't use the word, the vocabulary condominium. It was called a co-op, much like you still have in New York City. In essence, you owned a portion of a corporation, but you had your legal unit within that corporate environment. And later, when the state of Ohio embraced that vocabulary and created the word condominium within the state governance, then yes, but she indeed built the first condominium building in Cincinnati.
And there's so many condominium facilities now. Do you just see that trend continuing?
Absolutely. The aging baby boomers are a big, fuel for that. And people are just getting tired. I think, if you compare to, say, life 30, 50, 70 years ago, definitely heavy on the dual incomes, definitely heavy on, the debt that people have taken on, whether it be the two BMWs or whatever. That is just so much more consumer debt than would be normal. And with that comes, more income.
Lee, if people listening would like to learn more about your company, Robinson Sotheby's International Realty, where can they find that information?
Certainly online. My email is lee@robinsonsir.com, or they'd be welcome to contact our office. We're in Hyde Park at 513-321-6000.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, we get the question often about taxability of scholarships for students who are in college and people wondering whether or not that scholarship benefit is, in fact, taxable or not.
And the answer, like many things in tax, is maybe. Generally, if you get a scholarship to an accredited institution, typically a four-year college or even a two-year college, then the tuition and the books and the fees, the amounts of scholarship used to pay for those is non-taxable. However, if you get a scholarship that includes room and board, then the room and board is taxable.
To the extent that you incur costs, which many of us do who have kids in college, there is some tax benefits that you can take in certain cases if your income is within the allowable thresholds.
Yeah, and once again, the answer is there might be some credits that you're entitled to if you incur the cost. Again, they have to be for these qualifying costs, so typically tuition, fees, books, things like that, not room and board. That's what qualifies for the credit. And the biggest credit is what's called the American Opportunity Credit, which can be worth up to $2,500 per student. These credits are phased out, however, for higher income people. So they're most benefit to people making less than $90,000.
And if you're married, they're the most available if, as a married couple, you're under $180,000. And just to be clear, a credit is a wonderful thing. It's so much better than a deduction because a credit offsets your tax, your actual tax, dollar for dollar, whereas a deduction only offsets your taxable income, the income that's subject to tax. So anytime that you can take advantage of a credit, most often it's a much more powerful benefit.
There's also something called the Lifetime Learning Credit, which can be used by anyone who pays for qualifying courses. So if I take a course at a college and pay for it, I'm entitled to that lifetime credit, again, depending on my level of income. And of course, just to make it complicated, that's a different level of income where the phase out starts than the American Opportunities Credit. It actually starts at $63,000 if you're single or $127,000 if you're married.
Certainly, there are other deductions. If you, for whatever reason, can't take advantage of the credit, you have the tuition and fees deduction that you can reduce your taxable income by about $4,000, up to $4,000. Again, that is phased out when your income's higher. And then student loan interest. Many people have to borrow money, and in certain situations, the student loan interest is also deductible.
Well, and the one thing that makes me really appreciative of our legislators in Congress is that each one of these has a different level of income for a phase-out. It makes it almost impossible for somebody to figure out which one is going to be best for them without the use of some type of computer software program.
What we also didn't mention that I think is also very valuable, the American Opportunity Credit, for example, you can possibly even get $1,000 back even if you owe no tax.
And in many cases, the students who pay for their own cost or have had monies given to them to pay for their cost of education may not have much income, but possibly they can take the credit even if their parents get phased out of it.
But as you mentioned, the rules are very complicated. It's tricky. You may want to seek professional advice to make sure you're taking advantage of all the credits and deductions that you're entitled to. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, tax season is in full swing, and many people have already filed their tax returns and already gotten their refund.
Well, and they're probably really happy because they got that check in the mail or that deposit into their bank account. But really, that may not have been the wisest choice to overpay their taxes throughout the year so they could get a refund at the end.
Yes, it's just allowing the government to hold your cash all through the year where you could have spent it. But for some people, it is a very specific way that they can have a forced type of saving, so that if the average refund is over $2,000 for most people, that's a chunk of change for somebody just to get back in their checking account or a check in the mail. And so the question becomes, if that is your forced way of saving, how can you use that refund the most wisely to better your financial situation?
Obviously, if you can use it for investment purposes, that's the best way to do it. And maybe the best investment you can make is to take that money and put it into your own retirement account or put it into your 401k account or use that to subsidize a reduction in your pay when you increase your 401k contribution so you can take maximum advantage of an employer max.
IRA would also be another good way to invest that money. But if you do have credit card debt, some people still have lingering holiday debt that they may be paying for. Certainly, that would also be a good use of that refund to pay off those credit cards.
It would be. And if you really think about it, if you got a $2,000 tax refund and you have credit card debt that you're paying 18 to 24% interest on, you're really borrowing money at 18 to 24% to loan it interest-free to the government. Might not be the wisest financial choice.
Yes. So instead of allowing the government to have your refund, and even going forward for 2014, even if you adjusted your pay, had more net pay coming to you now, put that money into a savings account yourself so that you can use that for a Christmas fund, if nothing else, next year, so you don't have to incur those large interest charges. You just need to be wise about how you use your refund.
You do. And a lot of times people get into debt. They get into high interest rate credit card debt because something unforeseen comes up. It's not because they went out and spent too much money at a restaurant. It's because they didn't have a reserve fund and something came up that was unplanned. So one thing you could do with your refund is build an emergency fund, build some liquid assets that you can use when those unforeseen things that always happen, you know, whether it's your car breaks down, your furnace goes kaput, something always happens that's an unforeseen expense, you need to have a fund to take care of those problems.
And certainly you don't have to use all of your refund to pay down your debt or to put into a savings or an emergency fund. If you want to even keep a little of it out for your own fun, family vacation, or maybe something you've really been wanting for a while, but certainly the majority of your refund really should go to improve your overall financial situation. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Steve Hampton. Steve is the Executive Director of the Brewery District Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation, and Mike Morgan, who is a board member of the Brewing District. And let's talk about what's going on in Over the Rhine and how, right before your eyes, it's evolving.
It's pretty staggering, the amount of positive things happening. I've lived in the neighborhood since 99, and it's generally always been on an upward track, but the last few years have been just staggering in terms of how that rate is. And it's a lot of things. There's a lot of good, solid redevelopment, people reappreciating the great historic buildings that we have, being in the urban core and close in those walkable neighborhoods. It's a really fun place to be right now. There's always been some great bars and restaurants. There's a lot of new ones. There's a lot of other new activities. And you have the old standbys like Findlay Market and some of those and everything that downtown offer. So it's got a lot going for it right now.
Which seems like with the sort of the casino on one end and the breweries that are reopening on the other end, there's a lot of just business activity there that you had long ago, but not recently.
You know, one of the things that people should understand about Over the Rhine is what it is conceptually. I mean, it constitutes effectively half of downtown Cincinnati. And it is one of the largest urban historic districts in the United States. It's a little bit larger than the French Quarter. So most cities in America would kill for the potential that's there and over the Rhine. I mean, we have a neighborhood, effectively half of downtown, that is an historic district that can be every bit the economic engine that the French Quarter is to New Orleans. And the only reason that it hasn't been that is that we made bad decisions traditionally as a city. So this revitalization of Over the Rhine is not just about a neighborhood. It's really about the image of the city itself and the capacity of downtown Cincinnati to drive the entire region. So it's a very exciting thing.
You know, we've had so much debate in the recent months about the streetcar, probably years for that matter. From your perspective, what do you think the streetcar is going to do to help Over the Rhine?
The streetcar is really going to be a fantastic tool. The neighborhood was built before the automobile. It was built as a mixed-use, mixed-income neighborhood. And so you have storefronts on the first floor, residential above. You had industry right next to residential. And that's the asset and the character that we have. And the streetcar allows us to repopulate this neighborhood without tearing down another 50% of the historic buildings for additional parking. And that's the real tool for the neighborhood. It allows people to live with maybe one car instead of two. It allows us to repopulate the neighborhood again the way it was built and the way it should be reused.
You know, I've heard people talk about the Over the Rhine area as the bedroom portion of our city. In essence, people living in Over the Rhine and working down in the big buildings downtown. What do you see in that way?
Well, I think there's certainly some aspect of that. What you're also seeing is a lot of businesses being started in Over the Rhine. There is a lot of space. There are almost all these buildings had storefronts in the first floors that aren't really good for residential. You have a lot of these large industrial and brewery buildings that have just tens of thousands of square feet of space that are available for startups and light industry. One of the unique things about the neighborhood is that, and actually there's through a good chunk of the neighborhood is the urban mixed zoning district that allows light industry like craft breweries and places like Rookwood Pottery to coexist with residential. So we can have real businesses in the neighborhood and have that true mixed use.
Well, gentlemen, if folks listening today would like to learn more about the brewery district, what's going on in Over the Rhine, what's your website?
OTRBreweryDistrict.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Steve Hampton. Steve is the Executive Director of the Brewery District Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation, and Mike Morgan, who is a board member of the Brewery District and also the author of a book, Over the Rhine, When Beer Was King. And Mike, when was beer king? It seems like it's getting that way again in Over the Rhine, but when was it the real king?
It was the real king prior to Prohibition. And when you look at the evolution of Cincinnati and Over the Rhine in particular, you see how critical the brewing industry was to the evolution of the city and to the character of the city. So beer was really king when we had about 2,000 saloons in Cincinnati, and we had consistently over a dozen breweries that were in or adjacent to Over the Rhine. And it was really a big beer town.
The Over the Rhine name obviously relates to the German heritage, and I assume the breweries as well?
Yeah, the name Over the Rhine comes from the fact that the area grew so German so quickly that they nicknamed the canal that separated the other half of downtown, the Rhine, and going over it was called going over the Rhine. Our brewing industry was most definitely driven by that same German immigration. We made German-style beer, which is what made it so popular on a national level. It was golden beer. It was lighter beer. Not in the context that that is used today, but good lighter beer.
And Steve, you are the executive director of the brewery district, and you also are an architect, and you're bringing a lot of your skills to the brewer district's master plan, including the Brewage Heritage Trail.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that. What is your vision for that heritage trail?
Cincinnati, again, as Mike mentioned, was one of the biggest brewing centers in the country, and we have the largest collection of pre-Prohibition brewery architecture still remaining, and that's an asset that we have not done a good job of sharing with not only Cincinnati, but with the world. And the Brewing Heritage Trail is going to be a world-class heritage trail that will celebrate that. With the initial route that we're finalizing right now is going to be about a two-mile route through downtown and over the Rhine, and physically mark these historic sites and tell that story with signs, but also a virtual component with the technology that you have today and an extension of the lead tours that we have with guided tours.
It was amazing, wasn't it, Tom, how many marked buildings there were that used to be breweries.
That's right. Well, I think the race was a 14K, I guess, so
yep,
about 8 miles.
K.
So, and yeah, every periodically we'd see those signs.
And
so
what you
neat.
Guys got out of that, I'm projecting onto you, but what I'm hoping you got out of that was that you saw how much of our history was beer related, but also you probably had a new appreciation of those industrial buildings that you went by. It gave them an identity and it gave them a story. And what people frequently fail to appreciate about Cincinnati is that we have an amazing collection of building stock in Cincinnati. We're very old for an American city. We also have a fantastic story. And we have done a terrible job of celebrating either one of those things. And they go together. We start to appreciate the building stock and the potential of what it does for us when we start to tell the story.
Well, gentlemen, I just want to thank you for everything that you're doing to help celebrate and really reinvigorate what's our heritage. It's fabulous. And if folks listening would like to learn more about the Brewery District, what's going on in Over the Rhine, what's the website?
OTRBreweryDistrict.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Allison Head. Allison is the owner of Everywhere You Go. And Allison, Everywhere You Go is a franchise, but it's a very interesting franchise. Let's talk about that and how you started it.
Yes, I became interested with Everywhere You Go through a good friend of mine in Traverse City. He came up with the name, and I love the concept. And so we started this in January of 2007. And now we have over 65 locations. And then we have the Cincinnati Reds location. And we are specifically in all of the restrooms on the levels at the Cincinnati Reds.
So let's talk about Everywhere You Go. So you mentioned that you're in the Reds and many other places. What exactly will somebody who goes to a Reds game and goes to the restroom, how will they know that they're looking at your poster, your billboard?
You can't miss us because especially the restrooms when you walk in, they're pretty bare and you're not saturated with a lot of advertising. So when you walk in, you'll see them in the entrance, you'll see them above the sinks.
So basically these are posters that are advertisements for businesses.
That is correct. And we provide a very captive, creative, and affordable market.
You've had this business for about 8 years. What's the most interesting thing that you find about this business, Allison?
People who really are locked into a media that makes sense for them that everybody else uses, we are not that company. That captive and creative part, we can provide for our clients. They can reach out of their comfort zone a little bit more, but the most important is people remember you. It's all about the ad. Mm-hmm. We're about having the right location.
Do you help the business who wants to advertise? Do you help them come up with the words on the poster, the design, the what point they want to make?
Absolutely. A lot of people don't have the creative already made, and to have them understand what that visual looks like, we have separate graphic designers that we work with. So it can be complicated, and we come in and say, this is not complicated. It's very simple.
Initially, you think, do I really want my business to be advertised in a bathroom? What's some other challenges, and how do you overcome that question when a potential client comes back at you with that?
That is exactly what we get all the time, and it's really interesting. So it's not for the average company. And when I say average company, it's not for the company that has that phobia of, it's the restroom, or if we're at a ball game, is the person going to be drinking, and are they going to remember our ad, or am I going to be on my phone? It is for the company that that wants to have more creativity. They want to be in a location that otherwise they couldn't afford through other media forms. But you can have a ton of fun with this and make people laugh. And that makes me happy.
Well, I know that you're working with the Reds, but you're focusing on baseball teams, aren't you?
We are focusing on other stadiums as well. It's really an untapped market. And we have changed our product from billboards to wraps. And those are the wall wraps when you first walk in. So there's even more exposure for our clients.
What types of businesses, maybe somebody listening today and they think that's kind of interesting, you know, how would they know if they're a good candidate for this?
We are pretty quick on making that decision with companies. If they need, obviously, branding, we're perfect for that because you really can't go anywhere. It's right in front of you. And that creative part where if you're clever enough, I'm going to walk out and I'm really going to be thinking about you and remember you. So the companies that we've had, Ultimate Air Shuttle has done really well with us. There's a variety of companies. It's not for everybody, obviously not a manufacturing company, but a company that really needs to get their branding and their message. And if they have several products.
So if folks listening would like to learn more, learn about Everywhere You Go, what's your contact information?
EverywhereYouGo.com. And you can also reach me with our number, which is 310-2552.
And that's a 513 area code?
Yes.
310-2552. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Allison Head. Allison is the owner of Everywhere You Go. And Allison, you've had this business about 8 years. It's a very unique way that companies can market. Maybe you can share quickly what your unique characteristic is about your company, Everywhere You Go.
We are a company that, generally speaking, we're in front of the business owners, and that's the exciting part about what I do. We provide advertising in a very unique captive audience, so it enables a lot of clients and companies to deliver messages that they otherwise wouldn't get away with in big arenas.
We all are bombarded with messages. We can't go to our computer and turn it on with having messages in emails, spam messages. How do you help business owners distinguish themselves through their messaging, make it effective for them?
We are so direct and one-on-one. You can't go anywhere. So the advertisement is always right in front of you. So when I use the word like captive, you can't go anywhere.
So like, give an example.
Okay, so let's go back. We're at the ballpark. We're sitting at the Reds game and we get up and we use the restroom. You walk in and you might have, when you first walk in, you're going to have a big giant wrap that you look at as you're walking into the restroom, and then you're washing your hands at the sink. So there are places that you have to go and you can't go anywhere else, and maybe create a message that you wouldn't be able to if you're sitting in your seat.
When you say create a message, like a fun message, a lively message, something that keeps the reader's attention, what do you mean by
Yes. I always word it with our company that it's our job to have the right location and it's your job to have the right creation. So make me remember you. And with that, you can really have a lot of fun, make people laugh, and make them think about your product mm-hmm. a lot more than just the brand name. My least favorite texts that I get are someone taking a picture of the ad and sending it to me and saying, I'm thinking about you. And it's not about that. It's thinking about what's on that ad, what your company is.
The marketing can be very gender specific as it relates to the message that your customers want to put forth.
Yes, we have a lot of companies like jewelers, and they might have an advertisement where they want to reach both the male gender and the female. And they'll have maybe an ad that's cufflinks. And the female, they might be focusing on more of that diamond ring.
Mm-hmm. So you've had some pretty good success. You've been around for 8 years and you're growing. And certainly when you got into this business, if we rewind 8 years ago, wasn't the best time in the economy to be opening up a business. But what do you attribute your success to?
Oh, my goodness. Perseverance. Never, ever, ever quit. Stubbornness and passion. Mm-hmm. If you don't have passion, no one's going to buy your product.
Well, and it's interesting because you've made a real unique splash, I think, in the marketing space where other people just get lost in the crowd. This is really a kind of marketing that people are going to remember. So good for you. And what else, though, Allison, about your success? What would you, if you had one thing you'd like to tell listeners today, who maybe somebody who is thinking about starting a business, somebody who just hasn't taken that deep breath and stepped out of their box to do it, what would you suggest?
Same thing, never give up. And that passion and care. Mm-hmm. You have to care about people, you have to care about their product, and you have to follow through.
So Allison, if folks listening would like to learn more about Everywhere You Go, find more information about what you can offer. What is your website?
It's everywhere, the letter UGO.com.
Thank you so much for being my guest, and thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Ellen Siegel. Ellen is the author of the newly published book, Be Happy No Matter What. And Ellen, you also have this pen that you've created that you've created says, I'm happy no matter what. And you walk around and you hand those to people. And you're wearing one now. You gave us some of those as you met with us today. It's fascinating. How did you come up with the idea for the book and the button?
Well, the book actually grew out of my life not being so happy and my work as a therapist for many, many years, and also looking around, seeing how unhappy people are. The weather, certainly, and the darkness in the winter. And the buttons just seem to come out of the book as a spirit lifter.
Why is it so important to be happy? Why is it important to lift your spirits?
We have an opportunity. We're here. We're alive. Why not enjoy ourselves? It's not really written how we're supposed to do life. So we have a choice. So why not choose a lighthearted experience?
Well, and people really do have some control over their mental attitude. They can create and generate that happy feeling themselves, can't they?
I believe that's true because I believe it exists underneath our troubles. So many of us have really been victims. The trick is to not go on in victim consciousness.
So I firmly believe that you can control only your reactions. You can't control other people's actions towards you or towards anyone else, but you can control only how you respond to those actions, and you can choose to be happy, correct? You can choose to be that way.
Yes, yes. And it's not so easy when you're in the doldrums and you're suffering, but it's very important. These days, it seems to take less time and less energy to pull yourself out.
Do you have any strategies for people to be able to do that?
Yes, I do. They're pretty simple, not easy to think of, so it's good to write them down when you think of them. And certainly, most people have heard about a gratitude list and keeping fresh in your mind. Just the fact that I'm awake today is something to be grateful for. Parts of your body that work, being glad that you can hear, if you can, get up and walk around. And if you have disabilities, then to focus on what you are able to do. Keep that going and to get help to keep that going.
And don't you also think it's surrounding yourself with people who are also happy and have good attitudes?
Well, I think that that's the choice. I hate to make it black and white that mm-hmm. way, but that's what it is, either down or up.
So you have a free teleseminar that people can tune into. Maybe you can give the details on that.
That's Thursday evening, March 13th at 9 p.m., so hopefully everybody's home from work. It's overcoming emotions that get in the way, and we're going to take up things like feeling out of control on the inside, keeping stress at bay, feeling drained at the end of the day, and it's on the phone.
And what's the information?
Oh, go to www.behappynomatterwhat.com and you can register. Even though it's free, you still have to register.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Ellen Siegel. Ellen is the author of the newly published book, Be Happy No Matter What. And Ellen, not only do you have a book, you have pins that convey buttons, I call them pins, well, I guess you pin them on,
yes.
That say, I am happy no matter what. And there's even something I didn't know about. There's even an International Happiness Day that's the first day of spring this year.
March 20th.
Yeah, it was designated last year, and what I think is so great about it is it calls everyone's attention to the fact that you can make a choice, that you don't have to stay in victim consciousness. And any moment, we have a choice to either be downhearted or uplifted. So, and the day is sort of symbolic of that.
So many of our great leaders in history have all had some challenge that they've had to deal with. I mean, think about Franklin Roosevelt or Helen Keller or people like that who have had a challenge, but they've used that not as a stumbling block, but as a stepping stone to even reach greater heights.
I always feel like if one person can do it, then it's available for all of us. And so those people stand out as role models. And even if you need help to do that, to find people who can help you, it's worthwhile.
Well, and your book and your buttons basically say, be happy no matter what. And the no matter what part is important, isn't it?
I think so, because most of us have troubles. All of us have troubles, sure. Not most of us. And many of us are suffering. And so to have this idea in your mind, or even to see it on a pin that someone else is wearing, actually brings that idea to the forefront mm-hmm. of your mind. So you know that you have a choice. And I've been told they work sort of automatically. People see it and their mood changes.
I think it's a great idea. And I think if more people really did consciously think about being happy, having that attitude of, like you said, of abundance, being of gratitude and appreciation, instead of focusing on all of the bad things that are going on, really turn it around and say, okay, how do I deal with these bad things? How do I overcome these challenges so that they can have that positive attitude and be happy?
And it's really available. It's really available right there. I gave the buttons out early in the morning, 5:30 in the morning at the airport. Everybody's groggy and grumpy. Not even any conversation. I just said, would you like one of these? And people said, oh, what's that? Oh, can I have another one? A little bit like candy with no calories. Mm-hmm. So, and then there was sort of a wave of lightheartedness and happiness that went through. So I've given out about 5,000 of them already.
That's fabulous. And you have a petition that you want people to sign, correct?
Yes. And it's a petition at change.org seeking support for recognition, public recognition of the International Day of Happiness, so that businesses, social service agencies, government agencies could do something nice for their staff and the people they serve.
And I don't want to leave out, you do have an upcoming tele session on overcoming emotions that get in the way. That's on March 13th. People can register for that online at BeHappyNoMatterWhat.com. Ellen, thank you so much for being our guest and for spreading happiness throughout the world.
Thank you so much.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.